I'm going to try a somewhat different style for tonight's sermon because the reading that we heard from Mark's gospel is a change of style for his gospel. It's a little bit like, if you can imagine, if you were reading a historical novel and then there suddenly was a science fiction chapter in the middle of it. It's a bit like that. It's disorienting. Historical novels and science fiction novels don't just have different subject matter, they have different styles of language and different sorts of imagery. And when you are reading, you instinctively adjust your mind to the different types of literature. So here, at this point in Mark's Gospel, we suddenly come across a chapter of what's known as apocalyptic literature. And we have to adjust our minds accordingly. The best known example of biblical apocalyptic literature is the book of Revelation. But there's some more in some of the prophets, especially in Daniel and Ezekiel. And there are these apocalyptic chapters in three of the Gospels. So I want to attempt a similar kind of shift of style and see if we can discover something of the power of Jesus' use of this style by immersing ourselves in it for a few minutes. And to do that, I want to steal an idea from one of Brian McLaren's books, which was a novel in which he had Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, Moses and the Buddha turn up in today's world, working together for peace and reconciliation among their followers. So I want to spin that idea in another direction and imagine what this apocalyptic chapter of the gospel might have sounded like if Jesus had been around today and responding to the events of today's world. So I'm actually going to take the whole of the 13th chapter of Mark, not just the bit of it that we heard. So fasten your seatbelts, here we go. In late November 2018, Jesus and some friends visited Melbourne. None of the religious leaders agreed to meet them, so their visit was mostly just tourism, getting a feel of the city. Curious about the religious life of the city, they included the major sacred sites, St. Patrick's Cathedral, St. Paul's Cathedral, and the MCG. Late in the afternoon, they were standing in Federation Square looking back at St. Paul's Cathedral, and Jesus' friends were gushing about all they had seen inside. "Wow, that's quite something, that place, isn't it? How about all that ornate stonework? It's not as big as some of the ones that we saw in Europe, but it's not as cluttered and overdone. There's an imposing austerity about it that just blows you away, doesn't it? It's one of a kind. It really gives you a sense of the grandeur and permanence of the church, doesn't it?" But Jesus said, "For the grandeur and permanence of the church, the whole thing is coming crashing down. This one and the other one up the road too, and the rest of them. There'll be nothing left of their sacred grandeur and power and prestige, but heaps of rubble. Even now, the cracks are opening up, and all they're doing is desperately trying to paper over them. They don't even realise how sick the systems they've created are. And now it's all coming crashing down around their ears with an earth-shattering crash." Later that evening, they were sitting at an outdoor table in a bustling laneway, enjoying pizza and a few glasses of red, and they began to ask Jesus to expand on what he'd said. "When do you reckon these things are going to happen?" they asked. "Is it all planned? Will there be any secret warning signs that we can be watching out for? What's going to tip us off? Can you give us any inside information?" Jesus shook his head, laughing, and launched into an answer saying, "Don't get caught up in all that rubbish. Don't go falling for the doomsday enthusiasts who reckon there's a secret plan and everything and a code to be cracked that will map it all out. There's always going to be crazies bobbing up and saying, 'Follow me. I'm the one who knows. I've cracked the secret code of the book of Revelation and I can guide you safely through the terrors to come.' Doesn't matter what happens. They reckon that it's part of a plan that they've read in the tea leaves of their Bibles. Far too many gullible people will get sucked into their madness," Jesus went on. Every time there's something serious in the news, these fanatics crank up the speculation again. A tsunami wipes out several towns in Indonesia. A few nations talk about moving their Israeli embassies to Jerusalem. North Korea may or may not be closing down its nuclear weapons program. Emmanuel Macron crushes Donald Trump's hand in a brutal handshake, and they reckon all these things are connected and they know what it means. Just because some things are related doesn't mean that they're all part of a calculated plan. You saw that mountain of flowers outside that cafe there in Bourke Street, didn't you? Well, the owner of that cafe got killed nearby a couple of weeks back by a religious crazy who thought he was on a mission from God. And sure, you can see connections with similar things happening all over the world, but there's no plan. Just a bunch of crazy loners reading the same news and then doing the same crazy things. Don't imagine it's bigger or more coordinated than it really is. Keep your cool. These things will happen, as they always have, but they don't mean that time's up. People have been making such predictions since the beginning of time, and they've always been wrong. St. Augustine said that when the barbarians were invading the Roman provinces, everybody thought it was a sign of the end times. And how many more times has it happened since then? Jesus poured another glass of red and continued, "Nations will set out to destroy each other. There will be ethnic conflicts and civil wars, fortified borders. There'll be horrendous natural disasters, millions of people living in poverty and facing starvation. This is not new, and sadly it's not the end. But it's a bit like a woman going into labour. The world is shuddering in intense labour pains as it struggles to bring the new age to birth. Watch out for yourselves, because this is going to be a very painful time for anyone associated with me. As the institutional church plunges into chaos and scandal and it all comes crashing down, everyone who has any sort of link to the church is going to get caught up in the crossfire. This is unavoidable. The world will look at the failures and scandals and corruption of the church and they'll blame me. They will say that it proves that following me is foolish and unhealthy and dangerous to children and society. They'll harass you and ridicule you. They'll batter you with questions about why you would continue to have anything to do with such a corrupt religious fantasy. Your continued faith will offend them and infuriate them. It's an opportunity to show them the contrast between the gospel of love and mercy and the corrupt structures of power and control. But don't expect them to like it. And don't go trying to plan for it or trying to prepare what you're going to say in advance either, because that would just tempt you into seeing conspiracies and plans and plots everywhere you look. Just continue living your lives right, in love, in mercy, in openness. It is how you live, not what you say, that will best show what I mean to you. So don't worry about it. Let the Holy Spirit do her job of defending me. You are only witnesses, so all you have to say is what you've experienced yourself. Jesus went on, "It will get nasty at times. Families will be torn apart over this when one member wants to follow me and another thinks that believing in me is the root of all evil. They'll be filled with hate and they'll scream at you for aligning yourself with me and saying it makes you a culpable accomplice of child abusers and rapists and all manner of corruption and cover-ups. But hang in there and let your lives be your witness. But if it gets to the stage where the church itself starts responding with hostility and violent, hateful outbursts, and it starts claiming that God wants vengeance on his enemies and asking you to pledge your allegiance to the fight, then it's probably time to cut and run. If the church leaders start declaring that anyone who attacks them is attacking God and start claiming the divine right to retaliate against those who they have declared to be God's enemies, then they've really lost the plot and things are spiralling out of control. don't waste your time trying to see if anything can be salvaged. Just get the hell out of there. Sure, you'll have to leave some things that have been precious to you, but there'll be no time to lose. Get out fast, because the whole thing will be on the verge of exploding into a fiery hell of hatred, recriminations, and bloodshed. It will be a worse trauma than anything anyone has known before. And if God does not step in and intervene in a major way, there'll be nothing and no one left at the end of it. Don't get carried away with inflated speculation about world leaders either. Half of America thinks Donald Trump is the Messiah and the other half thinks he's the Antichrist. He's not really that important. Other countries have their own versions. And in this country here that we're visiting here, the politicians are so unimportant, they seem to have turned the Prime Ministerial Lodge into some kind of short-term Airbnb rental. People will start pointing out not only politicians, but various celebrities, preachers and archbishops, and claiming that they are the anointed one, the one who has been touched by God for this special time to lead us to safety. All kinds of false messiahs and prophets will have their ways of winning everyone's allegiance and leading everyone astray. Stay awake and on your guard. I've already told you what you need to know, so don't go running after those who claim to have the missing piece. There is no missing piece. After pausing for another mouthful of pizza, Jesus gestured back towards the cathedral and said, "As the end approaches, there will be a time of great chaos and trauma on the earth. Things will keep getting worse, and it will seem as though the whole cosmos is going berserk. Many of those back there who trusted so completely in the church and its leaders, it will seem to them like the sun has gone black and the moon will not shine and the stars are coming crashing to earth. It will be like their whole world has been knocked off its foundations. Only when everything anybody ever put their trust in, money, power, nation and religion, lies completely ruined, will everyone begin to see the new thing that is happening, the breathtaking arrival of the new human, riding on the clouds, dazzling with love and grace and unquenchable forgiveness. Only then will people gather to him from every direction, from the most far-flung corners of the earth to the furthest reaches of heaven, drawn like moths to a flame, to the pure and powerful love and mercy that will no longer be obscured by the corrupt apparatus of the religious establishment. Take a lesson from the trees. Many of them give clear signs when the seasons are changing. Those bottle brushes that we saw in the botanic gardens before were bursting into bloom as a sign that summer is arriving here. This is much the same. When you see these things happening, you can be sure that the things I've always been on about are finally rising to the surface and I'm on the move. The fact of the matter is that some of you will see these things in your own lifetime. The earth and the sky have use-by dates, but what I'm telling you here will stand forever. But just when that day or hour will come, God only knows. The angels of heaven don't know. Not even the sun knows. No one knows. So watch out and keep yourselves on the alert, because you have no way of knowing when the time will come. It's like an employer going off on leave. He gives all his staff tasks to work out in his absence and he leaves them to get on with it. He tells the leading hand to keep an eye out for his return. So keep your wits about you and don't slack off, because you have no way of knowing when the boss is coming back. It could be any time of day or night. And you don't want to be caught asleep in his chair with your boots on his desk. So what I'm telling you is exactly the same as what I've been telling everybody else. There's only one game plan. Love, love, and more love. Forgive, forgive, and more love. Keep yourselves on the ready at all times, lest you be lured back into the ways of suspicion and division and retaliation. Hold on tight to the hope that you've put your hand up to. None of this on-again, off-again stuff. think about how to stir one another up to greater and greater love and more ways of putting it into action. Some people will quit gathering together as a congregation altogether, which is understandable when the church has failed so spectacularly. But don't go down that path. Gather often. Support and encourage one another. The closer we get to that final day, the more you're going to need one another. The church is coming crashing down and the earth will be shaken to its foundations, and everything by which the powers that be maintain their delusions of peace is crumbling to dust in their deceitful grasping fingers. Stand up and rejoice. For when all the crap has fallen away, just one thing will remain. Love in all its glory. For God is love. And with that, Jesus tossed back the last of his wine, pushed back his chair and said, "We better get back to our backpackers soon or we'll be locked down."